What's up, Tad Pals? We're back. Another That's a Dive. Got a lot to talk about. Midweek action in the Champions League. Got some games today. Going to decide who, if Liverpool can pull it off against Roma. They should, with the position they're in. It decides what major superpower, super club will they face in the final. Will it be Real Madrid or Bayern Munich? We got producer Mike in the studio.
Hello.
PM is here. Good to have you back. We got three good topics today. Before we get into the topics, let's go into the reviews. We got one here from Shreyas Malhotra, and it's Hiya Kmart. The player I'd love to play with would be Nemanja Vidic. So we got that might be the first defender.
I loved watching him play.
Yeah. I mean, his song was really good. I'm not going to sing it, but
the song was great. He always was bloody.
Always.
Always got bloodied.
And by the way, typical of like hard-nosed defenders. I'm going to finish his review. The man seemed like he was made of pure metal with such destructive tackles. He was the backbone to Fergie's great teams. He even says seeing Juventus Chiellini kind of reminds me of him. Yeah, they have similar relentless.
A little bit insane.
Physicality, but a controlled insanity. That's what I think about when I think about both of them. And like any hard-nosed defender, what a nice guy off the field. I remember we did a preseason game back at the beginning of our coverage where we did when he went to Inter. And it was the first time he faced Manchester United. And I remember he came out and...
That was in D.C., I think.
Yeah. The Manchester United fans were booing because it was Inter Milan coming out. But then they got a look at Matt Vidic, and so much love. Incredible Manchester United love for Vidic. I mean, typically when a player goes back to play their old club, even if there's love, there's booing and whatnot. Yeah. None of that. I mean, absolutely loved by Manchester United fans. And I interviewed him after the game to ask him, you know, how strange is it to face your old club? He said, yeah, just so many good memories, and you're the fans support him. It felt great. I mean, you could see genuinely it was hard for him to play his old club because he had so many great memories and the fans. He loves the fans so much. And I chatted with him just a little bit after the interview, and he was just a real nice guy. Super nice. Probably would have kicked me up in the air every single time I got the ball, but super nice guy.
You would have run away from him.
I
for
definitely
sure.
would be on the other side of the field every time I got the ball. All right, let's get into the topics today. We're going to chat Liverpool. They got a huge game tomorrow in Rome to see if they can make it to a Champions League final. The other topic, we're going to talk Spurs, but we're going to start in North London as well with Arsenal. So we've talked already about Arsene Wenger. We've given our tribute, our love for the man who has, the professor, changed Arsenal Football Club and the Premier League forever. There was an incredible moment this weekend, and it gave you chills. We all talked about it when we went out of the studio and we were sitting there watching the game. The moment where, first, Arsene Wenger comes down the sideline at Old Trafford, and all the Manchester United fans give him a ton of love. I mean, such class from Manchester United fans. The rivalries over the years, for them to just put that all aside and show him tons of love. Then he gets down the sideline, and he's up in the seats at Old Trafford. It's actually this really cool but weird scenario. The field is up. When you come into Old Trafford, you come down the tunnel, and you have to walk up, and you can see it sometimes in the game where the players slide off of it or they show the managers coming up. You have to walk up this tiny little hill where the field is actually like 3 or 4 feet up,
there's
elevated
like a moat
from the ground.
There's like a moat around the field.
So drainage, but also, you know, old stadiums, just a unique thing. You don't, I mean, Liverpool has that to a certain extent, but it's not as drastic. And then you go down from the field and then back up the stairs to sit in the benches that are actually right there in the first stands where the benches are actually cut into the fan section where it's really cool. I mean, you're sitting feet away from the players and the managers, and Jose walks up the stairs to shake Arsene Wenger's hand, and Arsene Wenger thought that was the end of it. And then Jose brings him down. And they kept this a surprise.
Right.
Brings him up to the field where Sir Alex Ferguson was waiting with a trophy just thanking him and giving him respect for the job he's done, the service to Arsenal Football Club and the rivalry over the years. And it was a really incredible moment. The three of them, I mean, I don't think you could put three more successful managers together in the same picture. I mean, it was a pretty, and also the sort of the lineage, right? Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, kind of being the forefather, that you know, the of all of them, the most successful and the first one to really dominate in England. And then Arsene, who comes along and changes things, came from, you know, Asia at that point. No one knew who he was. The articles were saying, you know, Wenger, who changes the Premier League, and then Jose Mourinho coming in and doing it in his way and winning trophies, you know, recently, the last with Chelsea, and we'll see if he gets one with Manchester. It was just a really, you know, hair standing up on your arms moment. It was beautiful.
You touched on it, but it was a surprise.
Yeah.
No one knew
about
this.
Which is hard to keep in this day and age.
We got wind of it in the production from a little birdie on site. But
yeah.
Everyone was trying to keep that really secretive so that you could get an honest and emotional reaction out of Wenger. And it really worked.
Yeah. It was cool. It was really cool. You know what was interesting is Jose Mourinho was reluctant to be in the picture. There was, you know, a photo taken moment. And people speculate, was that Jose Mourinho respecting and saying, listen, you guys had these amazing rivalries. And they did. I mean, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, it was either Manchester United or Arsenal. And, you know, think about some of the iconic moments of, you know, Vieira and Keane fighting in the tunnel before the game. Mm. I mean, that amazing moment. They've actually made a documentary out of their battle.
The Van Nistelrooy.
Yeah, the Van Nistelrooy misses his penalty, and Keown and everyone jumping in his face. I mean, some of the best moments, whether it be teams winning titles or talented players, really battles. You think of Manchester United, Arsenal, and so to see the two of them, you know, just after it all, reflecting back and just shaking hands, it was funny because Jose Mourinho didn't want to get into that. And you think, well, yeah, I mean, that was a special thing. So he stepped out. And others think, well, it might make Jose Mourinho a bit annoyed that Arsene Wenger is going to get all this love that Jose won't. I mean, no team's ever going to do that for Jose Mourinho. Meanwhile, Mourinho, you know, when it comes to titles, far and above what Arsene Wenger has been able to do in 20 years of you know, at one club, just completely different managers. And it's funny to see that juxtaposition kind of play out in front of you when you see the awkwardness between the two of them. But give Jose Mourinho a lot of credit for, you know, helping to manufacture a really, really cool moment.
Before we move on from here, do you think Wenger's enjoying this a little bit too much?
What, like the love he's getting on the way out? No, I don't think he's enjoying it too much. I mean, think about how bad it's been for him recently.
Right.
I mean, everything that he's done for this club, right? Just, and I think for him, a lot of it is he can't believe the criticism. And this is going to be the worst season ever for Arsenal under Arsene Wenger. And for him, he's still surprised, which is why he needs to go. I mean, essentially, that's why there was a bit of pressure on him of saying, listen, you know, Arsene, we love you, man, but it's time to move on. This is what he believes he deserves, and he does deserve it. He deserves love, and this is the only way he's going to get it because, man, do they have a tough Atletico Madrid situation where they've conceded now at home against 10 men where they had 80 minutes a man up. Now to go to a place where you don't score on Atleti, I mean, 0-0, they go through. Diego Costa's probably going to play in this game, and we all know the
0-0 Atleti go.
Yeah, sorry, 0-0 because of the away goal.
Yeah.
I mean, Diego Costa probably plays in this game because of his history with Arsenal. He's going to stir things up. Arsene Wenger loses with a last-minute direct ball into Fellaini at Old Trafford. I mean, there's no good moment for him down the stretch.
So he Wenger-y.
He should soak up all the love he can get. So really the question is, who's next? We're past that now. And there's a short list of managers. I mean, there's lots of speculation. I'm not going to get into the who will Arsenal go for. I'll put on my Ivan Gazidis cap or my Stan Kroenke cap and the board and say, this is what I would do.
Okay.
I go for Patrick Vieira. And I'll tell you why. Some would immediately say lacks the experience when you compare him to some of the other contenders, whether it be Allegri or, you know, even when you look at Jogi Löw, not a lot of club experience recently, but obviously incredibly experienced and successful with the German national team. Luis Enrique, some people might say, experienced with Barcelona, but I mean, everyone wins with Barcelona. His job at Roma and Celta Vigo didn't really go all that great. you know, there are pros and cons for everyone. And I like a lot of the names that are listed. I think there's a strong argument for all of them. But why I say Patrick Vieira is, first off, lack of experience doesn't bother me. I mean, the experience he has in Major League Soccer, I mean, that's as difficult as it gets sometimes as a manager. He's done a really great job with NYCFC dealing with, obviously, a very difficult structure in terms of salary caps and the parity of this league that makes it hard to really dominate. He's had big egos.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Pirlo, that was a tough signing, even though an incredibly talented player. David Villa and Lampard. I mean, he's had to make a lot of things work. But one of the reasons I say go for him is the same reason that Barcelona went with Pep Guardiola, and Pep Guardiola had next to no experience. I mean, less than Patrick Vieira has. I mean, when Pep Guardiola got the Barcelona job, he had only coached the reserve teams, I mean, the B team for Barcelona. But you can't undervalue the club legend status and that affinity and that credit you have with the fans and the respect you immediately have with the players. In an ironic way, you know, Arsenal have kind of struggled to replace Patrick Vieira. I mean, it's funny. He would come back, and obviously not as a player anymore, but I think he could help bring the identification of a player they're missing mm-hmm. in that defensive midfield spot, the focus on the balance, as well as the attacking identity that Arsenal have had over these years. He will know the things that Arsene Wenger did that worked. He'll know them intimately. He'd probably be able to convince Thierry Henry and a few other legends to come back, kind of like Ajax does, where they bring back, you know, De Boer and Bergkamp and now Overmars and Van de Sar on the technical era board and you know, directors of football. You know, I think Arsenal could tap back into that. It's going to take some time. There are great pieces there. You have to look at the fact that Patrick Vieira is being molded to eventually maybe go back to Manchester City, whether it's takeover after Pep or soon. Arsenal should grab that.
Yeah, so would City let him go? Because it seems like the City Football Club has had a succession plan in place. Vieira's in Major League Soccer, getting some experience. There's rumors that he's going to take over the City team eventually.
I mean, they don't have any real right to him. I mean, at the end of the day, I think he has one more year on his contract with NYCFC. I talked to my friends at NYCFC about this, and they said, yeah, he hasn't been contacted yet. And, you know, I don't think they'd stand in his way. I think they'd see how important it would be and what a big opportunity it'd be for him to return to the club he was a legend at such an important time. And I really think it'll work. I think he can be successful. And I've gotten the opportunity to speak to Patrick a few times. I mean, he's a charismatic guy. He knows the game well. He was a legend on the field. He's one of those guys where if they miss him, you know, I fear they could miss having a really great transition into a new era where they keep a lot of what Arsene Wenger had rather than kind of start right over with something new. I think, like, Yogi Love is a total new look. Ancelotti, some of these other managers will probably be a totally new feel, and it'll be such a departure from the past that was successful. So I'd love to see them take a risk with Patrick Vieira, for sure.
I just want to show you the latest odds.
Oh, these are manager
odds?
These
are the latest odds. Now, there's a new name that popped up in there, which we're going to discuss later. But
so, yeah, we got Allegri. I mean, is he the favorite?
Yeah, he's the favorite.
Yeah, so we got Allegri, Enrique, Brendan Rodgers. I really like that one. Jardim, who did an amazing job at Monaco. I mean, it's kind of like you really can't miss, but it's just different. But the name you're talking about is Buvac, right?
Buvac, so, that's a new addition.
So that one just popped up. And for those that don't know, it's not a name, you know, household name, but a household face. I mean, you see him sitting next to Jurgen Klopp, the assistant for Liverpool. Some big news about Liverpool, and we'll get into that in the third topic, but just park that for a second, because his name showing up on the short list and the odds to get the Arsenal job,
it's pretty interesting.
Is very, very interesting, and it might give us a clue to some mystery around him and Liverpool right now. But, you know, I want to move on to Spurs, because Spurs, a team that made this transition already, and they hired a project manager. That's kind of how I feel about Pochettino. And that's why I say Patrick Vieira. Give Patrick Vieira the project manager ability of, you give him time, he's good enough, he has enough credit in the bank where people will let him get through this tough transition. Pochettino has been ahead of schedule. I mean, if you really look at it, And he said it recently. He was told when he was hired by Daniel Levy, when you get into the new stadium, which is next season, at that point we expect you to be finishing in the top four in the first or second season in that stadium. We want to see us finishing in the top four. The first season really battling and it being close and it being realistic. And then second season we expect to be in top four. I mean, they finished second, right? If, what was that, 2 seasons ago? Last season? What did they finish last season? Third, maybe? Was that the late Arsenal push where they...
No, they finished ahead of Arsenal.
Or not Arsenal. Year. Arsenal was outside the top four last year. I think that was... They finished second last year, maybe third the season before?
I'm looking right now.
Give me their last three seasons finish.
It's the end of the season, and we're all... Our minds are numb.
Yeah, we're a bit...
Yeah, so Tottenham were second.
Second, you know, last season.
They were 7 off.
Yeah, and the season before that, that was when they finished third, right, where they had where they at the end collapsed a bit.
Yeah, the Leicester winning season. Yeah, yeah, they look
and
like
Arsenal finished above them.
Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, they've been in a title race outside of his first season, which truly was transitional. I mean, that was getting bad personalities out of the group. That was making a few signings. That was bringing people in from the youth team, you know, Dele Alli. Mm-hmm. And that was a true transitional year. But, I mean, he's been battling for the title in almost every season he's been there. Latter stages of Champions League, I mean, outplayed Juventus and obviously some mistakes, and they get knocked out by a very experienced, very good Juventus side. You know, if you look at this season... They've been knocked out late in every competition they've been in when they've been kind of dominating and leading those games. So he's a bit ahead of schedule, which has created an unrealistic expectation and measurement. Because right now this season feels like underachievement, feels like they're struggling a bit. But when you look in the context of the team he took over and the project and expectation when he got there, He's still right on course. I mean, still right on track to over-deliver on what he was expected to do. So he's going to finish top four this year. Not going to have a trophy, and that ends up being the easiest stick to beat him with, is to say, you know, where's the trophy? But people forget, I mean, Spurs weren't winning trophies when he got there. So to all of a sudden give him a job where they're moving into a new stadium and he hasn't been given a lot of money in two ways. One is their net spend since he's been there has been minimal. I mean, they haven't even reached like the $80 million mark since the entire time he's been at the club. If you look at, you know, the Manchester clubs spending, you know, upwards to $1 billion on teams. And I just, you have to remind yourself, he's still ahead of schedule. He's still doing a good job. As easy it is to jump on him and say, you know, this team's good enough to win trophies, he still is overachieving with a group where you think about the next area of wages. I mean, they're in the top six. They're probably sixth in total wage bill. And that's the difficult part is, you know, players have started to leave. Like Kyle Walker just left, got probably double his wages, and just won the title. And it kind of reminds me of this happening to Arsenal, when Arsenal were right there, finishing top four. They were in Champions League. They played beautifully. They were always there and thereabout, but they'd always fall short and trip up in any major race or, you know, or Champions League, you know, FA Cups here and there. But players started leaving. You know, Cesc Fabregas and Nasri, they'd leave. They'd go win in that next season. And sometimes Champions League, if you think about, you know, Nasri winning domestic titles and Cesc Fabregas going to Barcelona and winning basically everything. You know, it will draw on these players at some point where they'll say, you know, I love playing. I love being a part of this project. It's been fun. We respect our manager. We're moving into a new stadium. But when the allure of not only a serious increase in your wages, but also success in winning trophies, it's gonna start to draw some of these players away. So one of two things has to happen. They either need to start winning, right? And that ends up being the hook. Yeah, we don't pay as much as Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal, some of these other teams, but and we win trophies. We play an exciting way. You know, our manager develops players, trusts youth. You know, that's exciting. It's in London. There's a big sell there. The trophies ends up being just one of the big pieces. You know, they have to reset that clock and get one of these trophies. Next season, he has to win a trophy. And then it becomes easier to assuage players' concerns that they're not getting their value in terms of salary. Because if you look at Spurs, it's almost like what Arsenal had to deal with Arsene Wenger moving into the Emirates, and that being a big debt, and Arsene Wenger saying, listen, we have to be fiscally responsible. We can't go just spend huge on transfers and salaries. Right now, we have to be responsible. And he did a great job of navigating that. But what happened is, you know, they were left being a team that couldn't really compete with the other sides. And now they've started to catch up, right? Now they're spending big on Mesut Ozil and brought in Alexis Sanchez, who they've lost recently, and Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, and salaries are definitely getting up there. I mean, Spurs are battling in a group where, you know, people are spending a lot more on players. So they're kind of approaching that point where you do one of two things. You just stick with the strategy and you say, this is us. You know, we develop value. We bring people out of the academies. We try to find value purchases or players maybe struggling and looking for a rebirth and a new opportunity. Or you say, you know, let's go get one or two pieces. Let's spend big. Let's spend £100 million on two players and hope this makes the difference, right? And if you think about the Bale money that they used, that's never really been their strategy. You know, they sold Elvis and bought the Beatles, right? That was the phrase. I mean, typically, they're not really going to spend big on one player. That's just not their recruitment strategy. But that Bale money was kind of wasted. I mean, Eriksen's really the only player
that's still there,
pretty much. That materialized out of that spend. So if they go spend on one or two players, like let's say they get Antoine Griezmann or someone who could become available, right, and could be interested in that project. The problem is they're going to demand huge wages. I mean, you're going to have to pay a guy like that £200,000 a week. Now you're in the situation where locker room chemistry is going to struggle because, you know, here comes a guy who hasn't played for Spurs making a ton of money. Are they okay if it gets them over the line to win titles? Maybe, but the problem is now there's precedent. Now you have a player on huge wages, and Daniel Levy's going to struggle to keep that wage structure. So they're at a crossroad right now, and I just think stay the course. I mean, if you really look at the body of work, Pochettino's still doing a good job.
If you were a fan new to the game, you wanted to support one of the North London clubs, say you're a young kid, which club would you steer them towards?
Yeah. Man, that's a hard one. That's hard because you kind of can't lose. I mean, both of them, there's so many positives with both of them. I would say if I was going to steer them one direction... Cue the hate tweets.
Oh yeah, this is why I asked you that.
Arsenal, I push him towards Arsenal. I mean, you're coming along at a low point. I mean, it only gets better from here. I mean, you have to think,
unless there's a managerial appointment
that's a huge disappointment.
It just doesn't. It doesn't work.
I mean, the reason I don't think that's going to happen is Manchester United didn't create an infrastructure behind the scenes. Moyes came in to replace Sir Alex Ferguson, not only the most successful English manager of all time, or manager in England of all time, but he did like 12 jobs. So Arsenal are smart behind the scenes. They've hired a director of football. They've hired a head of recruitment. They've hired a sports analyst. And you know, they've done everything to make sure the next manager that comes along isn't expected to run a bunch of departments. I mean, they're the head coach. They're the first team. So that's why I don't think it's that much of a risk. But, you know, the style, even in the down years, even this season, this is going to be the worst season in the last two decades. It's still so much fun to watch. I mean, it's always aesthetically pleasing. I think it will be under whoever they decide to hire. There's incredible talent there. It's a rebuild. I mean, you're at the ground level of a really great rebuild with a lot of good pieces. And I think finally, although Arsenal fans tend to be the most delusional, I think finally there's been a recalibration of expectation. And as opposed to Spurs that many think, and maybe their fans are starting to think, they should be winning things right now, and they should because they're great. So I'd push them.
So you hear it here first. Kyle hates Tottenham,
yeah.
Loves Arsenal.
Yeah, it's clear in his analyst that he's just pro-Arsenal, which no one would say. Arsenal fans hate me. They're on me all the time.
Right at the whistle.
All right, let's get on to Liverpool. So, speaking of projects, speaking of exciting times and hiring the right manager, I mean, Jurgen Klopp, right when they got him, I remember it really well when Brendan Rodgers got sacked. I put out so a big defense of Brendan Rodgers because I thought he was a bit – I thought he was unfairly sacked. I thought – listen, you sell Suarez. I mean, you lose some of your star players and also have the hangover and just continually being haunted by that slip and that miss and that moment where they almost pulled off something incredible. One of the best title wins in top flight history if Liverpool would have pulled that off. I mean, it's not his fault.
No, there were so many things. I started to interject. There are so many things that happened there. SAS broke down.
Yeah.
Sturridge couldn't stay healthy. Suarez is gone. Sterling is gone. Gerrard, he's at the end of his career. He's winding down. Jamie Carragher, the bedrock of that defensive line, he's done. He's winding down.
No.
That team needed to totally revamp.
And who recovers from that? I mean, what manager recovers from that? And defensive response, like, there were two things that I thought were on, that everyone kept putting on him that it wasn't fair. One was defensively not strong enough. Mm. You know, if they were better defensively, they'd be a better team. And I thought, well, listen, sometimes you have to decide what you want. They were one of the most exciting attacking-minded groups we remember. I mean, recently, that was one of the most entertaining attacking sides up there with this Manchester City
group. Absolutely.
And they didn't have the players to be as defensively stable as they needed to be. So Brendan Rodgers just said, listen, we're just going to outscore teams. We're going to continue to push in that direction. And here's why I don't blame them. The next part is the bigger part. Transfers were poor. The transfer committee they had of five people making these decisions, they struggled. And they didn't bring in people that could help to stabilize that group defensively. And that was on Brendan Rodgers, even though he didn't have any control over that. So he's fired, and here's where my defense of him stops. I defended him because I said he didn't deserve to be fired. But if you can get a guy like Jurgen Klopp, you get him. And I was big on great signing. That makes sense. You get a guy like Jurgen Klopp. What he did at Borussia Dortmund will be plug-and-play at Liverpool. So many similarities, so many things that he can bring that will immediately feel authentic, that will, for him, feel normal and familiar. He just knew how to take over a club like this. And he was out of all the candidates, for me, the perfect manager to do so. Now, defensive issues continued under Jurgen Klopp. Okay, again, kind of pointing out it wasn't really Brendan Rodgers' issue. We kept putting up that graphic comparing Brendan Rodgers' numbers to Jurgen Klopp. Right. We tend to do that with the new manager and the old manager. Are they any better? And it's not always, it doesn't always tell the story, because this one I think is misleading, because the numbers were in some categories better than under Brendan Rodgers than under Klopp, but for the most part pretty similar. But it still looks better, and it was a progression under Jurgen Klopp. We could see it. Even when Liverpool fans were saying he should be fired or he's not the right guy, he's not getting the best out of this group, we all sat there and said, when we looked at it and analyzed it, this is progression. He's doing a great job. He just needs one or two pieces, and he's gotten them. I mean, he sold his best player, quote-unquote, right, with Coutinho. I mean, how much did they end up paying for him? I mean, it's upwards to $200 million for Coutinho. I mean, incredible that you sell your best player and they're actually better without him. Why? Because they have the defensive stability now. Van Dijk has made them so much better in the back with his presence, his communication, his ability, his positioning. Henderson has improved in the defensive midfield role. Oxlade-Chamberlain has given a new dimension to their midfield where they have pace, they have composure. When those three players are out there, Milner, Henderson, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, or even you know, Wijnaldum, Henderson, Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's just more balanced. It's set up to let the front three thrive and for them not to be vulnerable in transition. And now they're in a position where they're going to finish top four and they can win the Champions League. I said it last pod, they're going to win the Champions League. They got a huge game coming up against Roma. I mean, all they have to do is make sure none of their old demons come up, none of the old defensive, you know, instability.
Unfortunately, that struck the last match.
Yeah, it did. Probably because they saw they could score 8 goals and should have.
Yeah.
But this Roma side, defensively stable for sure. I mean that is their bedrock. Not really known for tearing teams apart on the attacking side of things, even with what they did to Barcelona in the second leg. Mm. I mean, it's just unlikely they do that again. But we teased it before. There's a bit of distraction before this game. So Buvac, we just talked about the assistant coach. And to give you a little history, these guys go back a long way. They were teammates, he and Jurgen Klopp at Mainz, and they had a handshake agreement that the first one that went into management was going to bring the other along. And that's not unusual. That tends to be, when you have former players become managers, you always see something like this. They go back and it's a teammate that they have a relationship with, whether it be at the international level, at the club level. So that tends to be where these managerial bonds are made. And it's been an incredibly successful partnership. I mean, what they did at Dortmund was incredible. Jurgen Klopp has called Buvac the brain. And then this week, we get this news out of nowhere where Liverpool announced he's leaving temporarily, not being fired, no permanent leave. It's a bit coded. It's not exactly clear what's going on. But what they've said is, for personal reasons, Buvac will not be with the club for the rest of the year. Immediately, you have to speculate and wonder what's going on. And there were reports that these guys have gotten into a bust-up and it was too much for Buvac and he walked away, based on them having arguments in the past. But they've always been able to get over these arguments. I mean, they're two fiery guys. And listen, we have that in the studio, right? You know, offset mostly. Well, we get in fights about things and, you know, it's kind of like family. Yeah. You know, you fight, you kiss, you make up, and everything's fine. You know, I remember having teammates where we got in, you know, there's fist fights in practice and you hug it out and everything's fine. So I don't know what it is, if it's that. Hopefully it's not personal reasons, you know, a health issue for anyone close to him or himself. I mean, that would be awful. But it has to be something pretty serious to walk away from what could be the biggest accomplishment they've ever had together.
So, I mean, did we just stumble upon the reason?
I mean, that's the thing, is that we're all searching. It's something. This isn't trivial. There's something big, because you don't walk away from, being in a Champions League final by itself, but the potential to do something great. I mean, honestly, their biggest accomplishment as a pair would be winning the Champions League with Liverpool. They're on the verge. They're on the verge of getting there and giving it a shot. You don't walk away at that point unless there's something really big. So you said it. The odds now have him in the second. No, they don't.
Yeah. He's the second favorite.
He's the second favorite for the Arsenal job right now.
He is.
Which would be shocking. Not because he's not talented. Listen, if Klopp's calling him the brain, I mean, look at Jogi Löw. Jogi Löw was an assistant, and he's gone on to be one of, if not the most successful first-team manager Germany has ever had. So you see this from time to time. You know, number two's leaving from the shadow of the, you know, the big guy and going off on their own. It'd just be surprising for Arsenal to take a risk like that.
What does, to tell the people out there who weren't professional athletes, what does an assistant manager, assistant coach, what are their daily responsibilities?
Well, an assistant manager is actually incredibly important. I mean, in a way, more important than the head coach, because it is typically, and it changes team from team, but it is typically the person you have the closest relationship with as a player. As a player, the assistant is the person that tends to come to you when you know, you didn't make the first 11, or, you know, you're in training that week, and he's the one that kind of give you the, listen, keep doing this, keep doing that, you got dropped because of this. You know, more often than not, they're that conduit that really, like, connects you with the manager and connects you, bridges difficult conversations, but also knows you better, you know, jokes with you. Typically, the assistant also is the one with the cleats on, right? The one that, like, kind of plays in the keep away or when numbers are down, jumps in. And you just have a closer relationship with a number two, typically, okay. Stereotypically. That and a physio are two incredibly important, you know, the trainer, two incredibly important people, because that's your bridge to the big boss. You know, the reason this shouldn't come as a surprise is, remember that at Arsenal, I just talked about it a moment ago, that they've behind the scenes done a lot of work. Sven Mislintat, who is the head of recruitment, so he's not the director of football, but will sit with the director of football, who's actually a guy from Barcelona. They will sit as a committee and make decisions. he will have said, listen, I saw this guy at Borussia Dortmund. I know what he's capable of. I saw him run training sessions. I saw him do this. So there will be someone on the inside at Arsenal that knows him very well. So for that reason, it wouldn't surprise us if they would be considering him if he's willing to walk away. But here's what I don't understand. Let's say he's on the short list.
Yeah.
Why would he have to walk away from Liverpool? I mean, you still. I mean, they're not going to announce the Arsenal manager before the end of the year.
Maybe if you're him, and there's an opportunity like that doesn't come around, you need to do all that you can to get it.
Yeah, but here's the thing: is the relationship he has with Jurgen Klopp. You'd figure the history they have, he could say, "Hey, man, remember our agreement way back at the beginning where I said whoever gets a manager role first, bring the other along." But you know. Congratulations, so happy. It's been a great ride. I've got an opportunity to become a manager right now. Do you mind if I go quietly interview for this job? I can't imagine Jurgen Klopp would say no.
Yeah, I can't either, but I think the history is littered with number twos who aren't thought of as number ones by their superiors.
Yeah,
you know,
possibly.
Number one saying, you're not ready yet. You need more of this. You need
or
more
feeling
of that.
Betrayed. You know, being
Perhaps.
Feeling like, hey, man, we've got a good thing going here. I can't believe. I can't imagine it's that.
It's interesting because we talked about this yesterday on our show, and I remember when we were going through the rundown, I'm like, well, why are we talking about this? I didn't think it was that interesting because we didn't have any
now.
Now I'm like, holy,
yeah,
this guy is going to be the next Arsenal manager potentially, and no one even knows who he is.
But here's the other thing too, is I think to myself, if I'm recruiting him, it bothers me that he's walking away from a club right on the eve of
the most important game in a decade.
Yeah, I think to myself, well, that I don't really like that. That doesn't really demonstrate loyalty or focus on the objectives and the goals that you have at a club. So I can't imagine the Arsenal link is why he's walking away. And they're not mutually exclusive. Listen, he could have personal issues,
totally.
And the Arsenal link is a part of it. But it's wild. I mean, you know, well, Jurgen Klopp was asked about it. We're going over now, but I'll drop this one in. Jurgen Klopp was asked about it in his press conference today before this big second leg Champions League
game. And we're taping this Tuesday before the games.
So he didn't answer it. And Wijnaldum was asked it too. Both of them said, listen, statement's out there. We're not saying anything more.
Yeah.
So everyone's holding the cards tight to the chest. I mean, they're no one's giving anything up over there. So I guess, you know, time will tell. Again, we just have to say, hopefully it's nothing serious on the personal side, because, you know, you'd much prefer it was the drama of getting a great job or
Absolutely.
You know, something else. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But we also will see if Liverpool can get it done. I mean, Liverpool. I'm going in to New York City to watch this one with my good friend Roger Bennett. We're going to pop into a pub, drink a pint. And, you know, I'm just doing it because I want to see the Everton fan and Roger Bennett crying when he sees Liverpool going to a Champions League final. So we'll see if that one happens. But until then, Tad Potters, stand your feet.